Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Brian.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, well, hopefully we're there. So if we have any listeners, if you could email me at bonk@aol.com to make sure that we are being heard, I would really appreciate it. bonkaye@aol.com, because there is some trouble tonight with Blog Talk Radio, and we want to make sure that you can hear us, even though we're not sure that you can.
Let's pretend that they can, Brian.
How are you?
I think they can. I'm fine. I think they can hear us because while you were calling in again, I heard that automated recording that says Blog Talk Radio, and then it was time for you to jump in. So I just don't think you were on the line. I think we're there.
Okay. Well, hopefully we are. So I'd like to say good evening to all of our listeners. There are some problems tonight on Blog Talk Radio, because they have sent me a notice, but hopefully you're hearing us, and hopefully you're hearing us live. And if you don't hear us live, hopefully you'll be hearing us shortly on one of the podcasts. So this is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men, and each week my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, please feel free to call them in at area code 646-716-4893. Or if you'd like to email me, if you don't want to get on the radio, feel free to email me at bonk@aol.com. We're always happy to answer whatever questions you might have. So without further ado, I have my very special guest tonight, Dr. Brian Hooper. How are you, Brian?
I'm sterling tonight. How are you, my dear?
I'm doing good. I'm excited because in another couple of weeks, we're having our Philadelphia semi-annual retreat here, our healing weekend to help people who are on that path and need to heal. So we have women who are coming from all over the world. I can't even say all over the country. Now I'm so excited to say all over the world, including Australia, United Kingdom, Canada, you know, and all over the United States, from California, from the South, from Houston, from Florida. So people are really trudging here to Philadelphia for the healing weekend.
Amazing. Before we went on the air, I was saying to you, you have a huge listenership. Do you know what it is right now?
The last count I got from, well, it was 2 weeks ago when I had the last show. 3 weeks
uh-huh.
ago, because then I went on vacation, but it was 2,300 people.
Whoa, that is so cool.
In the
you
course of a week,
so...
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Just
yeah,
one
usually
week.
A couple thousand people each week, because don't forget, people can hear this from anywhere. And
right.
I have some wonderful women across Europe and also in South Africa, Australia,
you know, all over
the place.
I had the privilege, I want to say, and of course I won't reveal details, but I had the privilege of speaking with one of your European listeners, and we had a Skype session just a week ago, and what a wonderful
uh-huh.
human being. It was just such a privilege to support her in her brilliant life as she goes on from here, you know, having some resolution to, you know, getting out of the wrong relationship and looking forward to carrying on. And just what a delight that was for me to be able to just support her in that and confirm what it was indeed that she was seeing and helping her appreciate her own wisdom and insight.
And I think that's a wonderful thing about technology, that you could be anywhere, anywhere in the world and still get the help you need and not have to be misled into incorrect therapy. Because, Brian, my greatest fear, and I see it happening all the time, is that women find themselves in this situation and they're led into bad therapy, meaning that You know, somebody's giving them bad advice because they don't understand the situation, or they're telling them to hang in there because, you know, when you get married, you take a vow and you pledge to stay with somebody, right? Through thick and thin and
thick and
health. But do we have that word, you know, through sickness and health, through rich and poor, but it doesn't say through straight and gay, right?
Yeah, no, not for straight and gay, just for better, for worse, for richer, for poor, in sickness and health, but not mismatched orientation. I didn't see that in the vows. Nope.
Right, so I think that, you know, if people want people to stay with them if they're gay, then I think that needs to be included in the marriage vows now.
Well, I do too.
I mean, so
if people go into a relationship with somebody who says they're gay or they're, you know, bisexual, that's their business, and you know, I may not think it's a wise choice, but, you know, that's their business. But golly gee, when you go in anticipating one thing and the person not necessarily even and purposely deceives you, just, you know, has a recognition later because, you know, they were so afraid of the world's disapproval of who they were, they tried to shove it down and it just doesn't work. You know, when they come clean about that, then it's time to recognize what is and try to be kind to each other, but do what's going to be best for both people.
You know,
and that means going your own way.
I want to tell you something that I have a new epiphany now that I think you'll be really excited about.
Okay.
Because you know how people get so hung up? This is like my biggest hang up that people write to me about. You know, is he gay? Do you have any proof?
Uh-huh.
He says
right,
he's bisexual.
Right.
He says he's asexual, c-sexual, confused sexual, you know, everything but heterosexual. You know, so I have the whole alphabet for all the men. You know, the asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, you know, I won't say what the D-word is, but, you know, so anyway, it goes down the list. And then, you know, you have to justify each thing by saying, okay, well, let's say, you know, it's like going back to the Kinsey scale. Is he a little bit gay? Is he sort of gay? Is he having gay fantasies, but he's straight? Because some of these men tell their wives that it's very normal if men have gay fantasies. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's only a fantasy if you're not acting on it. Whatever. So now I came up with a new, I hope that people will adopt this, a new term that I think will resolve everything. So here's the
point.
You don't have to have a label anymore. You can just call yourself, I am non-straight. How's that?
There you go.
Anytime you're thinking outside that straight box, it's called non-straight. You don't have to be labeled as bi. You don't have to be labeled as A or B or C or, you know what I'm saying? Is that good?
Yeah. You know what? I think that's actually, you know, I've never thought about it before, Bonnie, but I have to give you credit. I think it's a very creative and thoughtful kind of approach because people get mired, women, I think, who find themselves married to a, quote, gay man, bisexual man, confused man, keep thinking, well, is there part of him that I can hang on to? And the bottom line is, you thought you were marrying a straight man. And if he's something other than that, and that's what you want, then this is not going to continue to work for you. It's not working for you now. It's not going to work in the future.
And you don't have to identify it. You know, it's not like you have to put it on a scale of 1 to 8. Well, if he's a 2, maybe he can go backwards or frontwards. Don't worry. He's not moving anywhere except ahead. But that's why I say, why label it? Why make it uncomfortable for the man? And maybe if he feels funny saying, you know, I'm gay, I'm bi, maybe he can just say I'm non-straight. You think that would feel better for them?
I think it's a very good point. And I have found that I can think of one client that I've had. One wonderful woman, very bright, very educated. She's in one of the professions, okay? You know, she said finally her former husband admitted to her that he has a boyfriend, they're having sex, and he still refuses to call himself gay. Because for him, and this is the case for many men, there's such a stigma that comes with the term. They think it means a whole host of certain behaviors or attitudes or whatever that they have to buy into if they're going to use that term for themselves. Uh-huh. And the reality, is that, you know, most people when they say gay, what they're really thinking of is a man who is sexually and emotionally attracted to another man. That's all they're thinking. And a lot of guys just don't seem to get it, so they don't like calling themselves gay. But the reality is they're having sex with other men. They're emotionally attracted to other men. They're gay. And they just hate using the word. Well, fine, but the reality is they're non-straight. So I like your term. That's very good.
Right. This way, you know what, you don't have to pigeonhole yourself anywhere because you don't
right.
have to say, well, I'm this level, that level, I'm thinking about it, fantasizing. All you have to say is, I'm non-straight. And
non-straight.
People can think what they want. It doesn't have to mean gay.
Right.
It could mean you're transgender.
Right.
It could mean you're asexual. It could mean you're bisexual, gay-sexual. It could cover that broad spectrum of you could be into fetishes, fantasies, make them non-straight.
Well,
they all,
you know,
and that way you don't have to identify yourself.
Well, straight people are into, you know, fantasies and fetishes too.
Certain
so
kinds of fantasies.
People.
No, not the gay kind of fantasies I meant.
Oh, okay. There you
I don't
go.
Think straight people are into gay fantasies, right?
No, I don't think so, no. No.
No. I say if you want the penis, it's a gay thing. It's
right,
just like
right.
the transvestites.
And,
you know, like women
straight,
don't understand the transvestites.
The straight man may look once because he's curious, but he doesn't go back again, you know, because he's
for
not
more.
Interested. That's
exactly.
Right. You know?
And how about the ones where they call it, you know, excuse my language, not to be, you know, profanity, but they call it chicks with dicks, or, you know, the ones who are so feminine looking, but they have a penis. And so the men tell their wives, well, they're women. I'm not looking at men. I'm looking at beautiful women, and some of them are gorgeous and beautiful, more beautiful than the straight women that I know. They're gorgeous, but
mm-hmm.
they still
but they
have a penis.
Have,
it doesn't make it any better, right?
Right. And hey, you know, I can't think of one straight man I know who wants that. I can't
Me
think
either.
Of one. I mean, once,
I know.
Once,
what a surprise
you know,
that would be, right?
Exactly. It would be a surprise, and they would be out of there in a heartbeat.
And that feels very violated.
And that's not a judgment on those people who are, you know, preoperative transsexuals or they like gender. I'm not judging them. All I'm
right.
saying is that if you're married to a man who wants that, again, I keep coming back to what do you want, ladies? Is that what you want? Is a man who's attracted to this anything other than you? You know? And that would go for men who are straight and they're, you know, philanderers too. Hey, you know, if he can't seem to keep it together with you, then you deserve better. Move on.
Mm-hmm. And that's
yep.
what I tell women. You know, the important thing, like we were talking in our chat room tonight, women sometimes get very stuck. And they're in a relationship. Here's like some things I don't understand. They marry gay men, you know, who are not particularly nice to them, who don't want to be intimate with them for sure, who don't even want to be affectionate with them, and yet they don't want to let them go. Like, what's the story
right.
there?
Well, you know, think about all the perks that come with being perceived as a straight man who's married in this world.
Uh-huh.
You know? The reality is you're not questioned in terms of something that's very central to the human condition. You're mainstream, and they like that. Maybe they come from a family that's very, you know, that's very conservative in many different ways, religiously and politically. They don't feel that they can come out to that family. So they sort of take refuge in hiding out in a straight marriage, but they're not straight. And it doesn't fit them. And it only is destructive for them individually, as well as it is for the woman they're married with and for their relationship and for the children that are involved. It's not the thing they need to do.
Brian, let me ask your opinion on something. I've had three or four different women, I would say, in the last 4 or 5 weeks. Who I've grown to know really well over the years and who are part of the support network, you know, who got a divorce, you know, and left that they felt, you know, bad because they didn't have proof, you know, about their husbands.
Uh-huh.
But they knew something was wrong or the husbands left and blamed other factors. And now they're finding out, you know, 2 years, 4 years later, whatever the case is, that their husbands have boyfriends or live-in mates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, they're so devastated because they were saying, mine would never, ever do something like that. You know, even if he's thinking it, fantasizing, they caught the porno, he wouldn't act on it. What's the likelihood that a gay is never going to act on being gay, do you think?
I think a gay man in a straight marriage is... has a very, very high percentage chance that they're going to act on it.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because, and here's the whole thing, because it's gone underground and they're living with this secret, and that the tension it takes to hold that secret together, the energy, the psychic energy, and by that I mean psychological energy it takes to keep that secret, it's going to emerge, it's going to burst forth in some way that's not going to be helpful. In other words, they're going to act out and they're going to have sex with another man someplace. And it's not even going to be meaningful for them. It's just going to be furtive. They may not even know their real name. Probably they don't.
Right, and might just think it's a release, that it's not
right.
really gay sex. It's just a sexual act
right.
to release
and then
their anxiety, right?
Then they can tell themselves, okay, now I'm going back to, then I'm going back to my wife, and that didn't mean anything. It was just, you know, boys being boys. Well, that's really not the case.
Right.
It's a delusion.
Because I don't think that, you know, straight guys do this, no matter what they tell their wives.
No, they don't.
So hard, you know, and the women want
right
to believe so much that, you know, their husbands are doing the right thing. And, you know, I have another guest who comes on once a month, Suzette Hinton, who's, you know, a wonderful coach for women going through this. And, you know, she's in a situation where she remarried her gay husband twice. And I don't feel that it's that unusual because, you know, she had a very strong church upbringing. And church says, you know, God can cure everything. And when her husband who left her came back and said, look, I've gone for treatment, I've done everything possible to change who I am, you know, and as a Christian, she thought she owed that to him, only to find out again, nothing had changed.
Well,
and
treatment,
think,
treatment for what? Treatment to turn him from gay to straight?
Yeah, with prayer, that, God can make everything happen. Don't you know that, Brian?
Well, I tell you what, I have been an ordained Lutheran clergyman for 28, going on 29 years at this point. And I can tell you that it doesn't work. The pray the gay away does not work. Also, the American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Pediatric Association, the American Academy of Clinical Social Workers all have taken a stand against what's called reparative therapy, therapy engaged to try to change gay men into straight men. They've said not only does it not work, it's also dangerous because it tends to promote self-loathing, and the result is depression and anxiety. So any reputable therapist will not be engaging in that kind of therapy. You know, I am serious
yeah,
as a heart attack about that.
This is the church. And you know, she's from a minority, you know, community church, Baptist church.
Uh-huh.
And some of them will not change their thoughts on this. They really do believe that, you know, gay can be prayed away. Or even if you're gay, you don't have to act on it. You know, you still don't have to be acting on it.
Well, you know,
so,
I live in the real world. And I see miraculous things in the real world. But I'll tell you what, that's not one that I have seen. What I have seen is reports that men have changed, only to find out later that really hasn't changed. And those who say, oh, I'm living a straight lifestyle, well, they are accommodating themselves to staying with their wife. But even those people are now admitting, but I still have fantasies in my head about men. So, you know, I'm saying it doesn't work.
Yes, well, you and I both know that. Also, I wanted to, you know, ask you this question or how you would respond to this. So I have a man who wrote to me, and he's written to me several times. You know, I've told him what I feel he should be doing. And he said, he asked me this question. I'm going to be speaking to him, you know, this week. But he said, my main question for you from the perspective of a straight wife, is it ever better for the gay spouse to just stay in the closet? We are in our 40s and have two happy, well-adjusted kids. I never had an affair and wouldn't while we are married. We are good friends, but the sex gets more infrequent each year, and she knows I'm often depressed and not present, quote unquote. Oddly, I'm the one who initiates sex when we do have it about once every 3 months, probably so I can fool myself into feeling normal.
But he says, I'm guessing that she's
losing her interest in sex because she senses there's something off about our physical relationship. Even so, it sometimes seems more humane to just keep going on like this so she doesn't have to have her world turned upside down and deal with the embarrassment of me coming out and trying to find a new partner. Is this ever the right choice? I think I know your answer, but I had to ask. So how would you answer that?
Well, okay, so the disclaimer that I always give as a psychotherapist is I can't make your choices for you. What I can do is predict what will happen if people make either choice A or choice B. If he makes choice A, which is to stay in the closet and do what he thinks is the, quote, humane thing, then chances are he'll become more anxious and more depressed over time, which will depress the relationship even further. She will feel further self-doubt about herself, what's wrong with me, that he's not interested. I ultimately believe it's trying to protect him from the pain of going through it as much as it is her. Choice B means, yes, there will be pain. It will be excruciating if he comes out and tells her the truth. However, it's the path that a person has to go through in order to have real freedom and the fullness of being an alive human being that's living in an authentic kind of way. And I think that we are called to live authentic lives, which means that we don't live in a way that's contrary to who we are at our core. So, those are my two cents on it.
Well, I think I know you answered. Well, I'll tell you how I responded to him.
Probably
you tell me if you agree or not.
Than I did. Go for it.
I don't know. Maybe not. I wrote to him, I'm sorry for the... Okay. I said, you said she knows I'm often depressed and, quote, not present. I wrote, that's correct. Women know something is wrong, but they internalize it. They think they are responsible for their husband's unhappiness. They become depressed. Sometimes they have to take medication because they can't figure out what they are doing wrong. I know you love your wife and family, but love isn't enough if it doesn't equate into honesty. I'm sure you are trying as hard as you can, but it doesn't matter. You are gay. You need to learn to embrace it and accept it. Then you need to help your wife during her time of grieving the loss of what she was counting on for a lifetime. Chances are by now she won't be surprised, but even if she is totally shocked, she will recover. She will be angry at you and may express that very clearly, but you need to give yourselves a real chance to find the happiness that you were both destined for. This isn't it. You deserve to live an authentic life. That doesn't mean you have to attend gay rights parades. It means you have to find someone you can have passion and intimacy with, because as a gay man, it's not happening with a straight woman. Living a lie is just that, living a lie. You don't have to do it, and if you love your family, you shouldn't do it. And that was what I told him.
Wow. Well, we are definitely on the same page, aren't we?
Definitely.
It comes back to that issue of authenticity. You know, and the word authentic, I'm not going to publish this yet, but I was doing some research not too long ago, and I believe it comes from the Latin augare, which comes from the root word for earth. And in other words, authenticity and authority are about the power to cause something to grow, and that something is our own life into the fullness of who we are. And I just think that that's crucial. That's absolutely crucial that we grow into the fullness of who, as you say, we're destined to be. You know, what's in our nature. And
I just received an email for you. And
he's living in a way that's contrary to nature, isn't it? His own nature.
Absolutely. That's the whole thing.
Oh, anyway.
Living something, a life that you're not. So here's an email from one of our listeners right now. I won't say her name since, you know, I don't want to do that.
Sure.
Because I have an aunt.
Right.
She says, I never thought mine would get into a relationship. She has a question for Brian. I never thought mine would get into a relationship, but here he is. And I just learned it has been going on for a year and a half. And he is, quote, much younger than my ex. I warned him that he could be after his money, as I've heard this to be often the case. What is your opinion about these older-younger relationships? A friend of mine is very concerned that my ex is being conned and my kid's inheritance will be gone. My ex insists that this is not the case, but I doubt he has actual evidence that he is even employed.
So I'm going to answer that sort of academically first, and then I'm going to address her and my concern for her and even being involved in this, okay? So sort of the academic response is, well, younger men and older men get involved with each other for the same reason that younger women and older men, straight men, get involved with each other. And the reasons are mixed, right? Because the younger one can give a certain cachet of strength and youthfulness to the older one. But also it can be a mentor kind of role where the younger one is drawn to the older one's wisdom and mentorship. But also can be as simple as, he has money, I like money, this could work for me. And so it can be a whole host of different things, including the fact that there's just some chemistry there that works. So we can't say per se that just because it's a younger person and an older person, be that straight or gay, that it's all about the money. I think, and I'm speaking now to your listener, thank you for your loving concern for your ex-husband. That's very gracious of you. You've shared your concern. That's all you can do. Don't be further involved with it. He's going to have to learn himself. And hopefully he might, you know, use his cognitive skills and be discerning. But it's not your job to save him once again from himself.
Oh, I don't think
Bonnie,
she cares about him right now. I think she cares about her children and their inheritance.
Ah, well, then if that's the case, I don't know, she can only, this really depends on, you know, what control she has over that legally. If that's the case, then, you know, maybe she wants to sit down again with her ex, and I understand now the motivation that she has for her concern, to sit down and say, let's look at some very practical concerns. What do you know about this younger person? Do you know where he works? Do you know what his income is? Are you considering any investments in him, any loans? Please reconsider those things. If you do anything, make sure you get it done in a legal way so that, you know, you're not just giving your money away. That's a very viable concern she has.
I see so many times when this happens and these men, you know, first of all, now they're exhilaratingly, you know, exhilarated and free. They're now entering their new life.
Sure.
And, of course, you know, as we all say, they're like the kids in the candy shop. You know, they're out there going crazy.
They're straight men who do the same thing, right? Same thing.
No, because straight men have always been straight. So
no,
they don't exactly have to be.
But when the straight man, you know, leaves, has his midlife thing and cooks up with some younger, you know, very attractive, youthful, you know, girl, he can be just as naive and manipulated as the gay man can be. That's
certainly possible, but I see it happening a lot more only because I think there's a difference in the thinking. I think when a gay man comes out into the world, you know, and he's just starting his life as a gay man, he's going backwards to what he missed. And a lot of times,
true.
He missed that youthful period of time, right?
Right, and if we don't, you know, developmentally, if we don't go through what we should have gone through as teenagers, no matter what age we are, we will go through it, and we may be as silly as we were as teenagers. So, I concur with that idea. Absolutely.
Right, so I see that happening a little more, I think, because of that. We're a straight man, you know, it's not like now he's just entering his new life of, you know, his sexuality. You know, he's had sex with women, so he'll have sex with more women, you know.
Right.
But it's not the same kind of newness and excitement. But I see a lot of them that I feel really do get caught up into these kind of predatory relationships where there are young guys who are out there who are specifically looking for, you know, new guys. I see a lot in guys who come to me, you know, for help. And they feel like they were used, they were taken. And, I mean, that's possible. You know, it's not all the time, but sometimes. But I think that, you know, when you're in love with somebody or you're seeing someone, there's nothing you can say to them because they don't care.
Well, that's true.
Sometimes nothing's going to change their mind. You tell somebody, think with your head and not with your heart, what are they going to tell you?
Yeah, they're in trance.
They're going to say, I don't need a mother. Right. Yeah, but I do understand, you know, this person's concern. I don't think there's anything you can do about it.
Well, you know, you give it your best shot. But
yeah, but I don't think these guys really want to hear it.
No.
You would probably tell them, mind your own business.
But I can appreciate her concern for her kids, you know, and giving it, you know, round two just to see if she can make any points at all.
These are
can't
hard questions with no easy answers, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So, wait a second. Let me just see what she wrote back to you. Hold on one second.
Okay.
She said, thanks. I just needed his opinion. And she won't be talking to her ex anytime soon.
All right.
Yep. Yeah, some of us are going through a new phase, Brian. Me and this other woman who just wrote to you is a good friend of mine. I hate to say it, but, you know, I'm going through a new phase in my own recovery. I'm really finally divorced.
Yeah, right, good.
I'm emotionally divorced. Yep.
Right.
That chapter of my life is now closed. We're not friends anymore. We have nothing to discuss, and it's finally a real divorce, and it's a really good feeling for me.
Yeah, it sounds like you're feeling really free right now, Bonnie.
I am, because, you know, just having a divorce paper really isn't always enough.
No, it's the beginning. It's the beginning. No.
I know, but I've had it for 28 years, Brian.
Oh, yeah, well, good. Congratulations.
It should have been an end a long, it should have been a long time ago, right? I always tell my women, don't do like I do. Learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
You know,
But
a lot of us are very kind, generous, caretaking women, and you know, we loved our husbands, and so we don't want to stop loving them just because they're gay.
Yeah,
but that's not why I stopped loving mine. I just stopped loving mine because he's a jerk. So it's different.
Well, you know, this is why I so appreciate being able to work with some of the ladies who've contacted me through your program, Bonnie, is because it's so gratifying when I can see them beginning to love themselves and take care of themselves. And that's what I want all of your listeners to do, is to take good care of themselves. And, you know, some have good relationships with their ex who are respectful and they got honest with their wives and did the right thing. And that's great. I never want to undo that. But for those who've really suffered, my gosh, it's so good to see them beginning to leave that behind and move on with their really beautiful, wonderful lives. And what a privilege to encourage that. It really is.
Can you give some advice to women who feel really stuck, Brian, emotionally, as far as leaving their marriages? And mostly, these are the women who don't have really the proof. And for every woman, proof is different. In fact, we have a wonderful guest who comes every few months to our show, Mike from Linked Investigations. He's a private detective.
Right.
And he's really great. He gives women really great advice as far as, you know, what to expect when they're finding their husbands cheating. And he's really done a great job. But like he says that, you know, you have to learn to accept sometimes that what you're seeing and your instincts is what you have to go on. That you may not ever get the kind of proof that you think is proof, like walking in and seeing your husband with another man. And you shouldn't have to take that to make you feel validated. Do you agree with that?
Right. I completely agree with that. In fact, I just had this conversation with one of your really wonderful listeners, and I said, listen, we're told to value what we see with our eyes. We're told to value what it is we hear with our ears, but we're told to devalue what it is that our intuition picks up on. And I truly believe that what intuition is picking up on all the meta communication. That's what it's called, all the little signs that come in the way a person pauses before they answer a question, the way they hesitate, the way they hug you differently than they used to hug you or kiss you differently than they used to kiss you. That information that you're picking up on, don't for a minute dismiss that. You listen to that. And it, let that feed into what it is you're seeing and what it is you're hearing, because it's just as valid. Your intuition is just as valid as anything you can see or hear. And it's a package deal. It's a package of information, a package or a packet, whatever you want to call it, of information. And each part of that packet needs to be equally as valued. So, you know, you can witness things, glances between your husband and other men, and you know when it's the normal kind of exchange between straight men and when it's the kind of furtive exchange, glances between men that are trying to keep something from those around them. And if you think you're just being paranoid, but that's what you're seeing, and then you're not having sex and you're not having interest, and he's, you know, his whereabouts are uncertain, it all comes together. Listen to yourself and trust that.
And I think that's really great advice, because a lot of times what happens is that when women confront their husbands, they start yelling at them, you must be crazy, you know, you have such a horrible imagination, you need to go for mental health help, you know, you need a psychiatrist to even be thinking these things. And that just, I say in a lot of cases, what men do in this situation, the ones who just won't want to let go, you know, they shout you down to shut you up. That's what my ex-husband used to do. He would shout at me and shout at me until I was afraid to say anything because I didn't want to be yelled at and berated.
Right.
So I just shut up and became somebody who I wasn't.
They shout you down to shut you up. That's really good, Bonnie. I mean, it's tragic that it happens, but that's really well said.
Because I see that happening all the time, and it happened to me. You know, my ex-husband, he still does it. You know, if he doesn't like what I says, he yells at me so that I won't, you know, now I'm not even married to him.
Right.
But this is a manipulation tactic he used through our whole marriage, and no woman wants to be shouted at. And this is how a lot of the guys manipulate their wives, by yelling at them. And this way they just keep quiet because they don't want to keep feeling, you know, even worse than they already feel.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
So it's just another form of manipulation. You know, somebody who's narcissistic or sociopathic, you know, this is the way they feel they can take control. A lot of it's about control. I really have this theory that when a gay man can't control his sexuality, he has to control all of the environment around him, you know, because he has no control of who he is, and he's trying to hide it so well. So he keeps, you know, doing these manipulative things. Like a lot of our women have been moved around a lot by their husbands, from city to city, further and further away from any family they have. Or they've been in a situation like I've been in where the, you know, husband just makes it so miserable for the family to come over by instigating fights, you know, trying to alienate the person from their family. That happens very often with these men who don't want to be honest. Yeah, I feel that by isolating you, that you're going to, you know, they can control the situation. Your family's not going to be there for you to talk to, you know, so they keep you moving around.
Yeah, sadly, that's the same thing that other men who are abusers do, and other physical abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse. They're just different. They're just different ends of the same spectrum.
But, you know, it happens to a lot of us. I know that within the time that we were married, we moved like seven times in a few years.
Oh, my.
And, you know, anytime my family would come over, a fight would ensue. So it was only a matter of time when my family said to me, if you want to see us, come see us. We don't want to come there.
Right,
and then, then when you want to go, then your husband says, well, you'd rather spend time with your family than at home with me. You're making them, so you're picking them over me. So, you know, you're, again, you know, manipulated into just backing out, backing away from any kind of support you might have.
It's interesting how manipulation, if no matter what it's in the service of, the same patterns emerge. I used to be a guest lecturer at UCSD in a program that had tried to help take care of and resource minority students who were perceived as being at risk for not doing well, to help them do well in college. And what I was asked to lecture on was high-pressure religious groups that come on campus and try to control the lives of those that they saw as somewhat vulnerable. And so, and some of these students were vulnerable to that. And I would talk about how to recognize unhealthy religious groups. It's the same stuff that happened in North Korean communism. It's thought reform and mind control. You separate people from their family or their community. You tell them that their truth is not real, that only you have the truth, and that anything outside of your version of the truth is wrong. You often deprive them of, in that case, of food and sleep. That may not happen as much, but it does sometimes happen with abusive men that they will do that. And you keep them from having any other kind of outside contact. Well, this is what happens with controlling men, doesn't it? You know, they keep their spouses from family and friends. They control their every move. They tell them that what they're seeing is not really what they're seeing, and that they're the only savior for them. They're the only one who will ever love them. So don't think that you could find somebody else, right?
Well, that's what they tell us all the time. Nobody will ever love you the way I love you. You'll never find somebody else who will accept you with, you know, your faults like I do. And it's just so confusing. And, you know, what I tell women, that you can start out being a strong woman and this can still happen to you. I was very strong when I married my ex-gay husband. I was involved with political kinds of activities. I had a high-level kind of job. It was a little offbeat, but okay. But, you know, my self-esteem was at its highest point. And, you know, when I met him, I was mistaken as far as his strength, mistaking his strength for, instead of being recognizing a bully. You know, I think a lot of times women are looking for a guy who's stronger than them, you know, and so to somebody to lean on, and that gets kind of mixed in the whole imagery there. But within a few years, I was somebody totally different. You know, I didn't even know who I was anymore. And I think if it could happen to me, who was so strong, it can happen to anyone. You know, it doesn't matter if you're weak or you're strong. It's going to happen when you have someone who's trying to control you. And, you know, I agree with you totally on the whole cult mentality, because many years ago, let's see, were you born yet? Yeah, I guess so. But anyway, back in the 60s, well, really in the 70s, you know, I was involved in, like I mentioned, some political activities, and one of them was fighting cults. And back then, you know, I was living in New York, and there was a cult group called the Moonies, which was Reverend Sun Young Moon. Do you remember him? Yeah,
absolutely. The mass marriages and,
the Korean marriages. And, you know, my group was, you know, fighting him, taking people back, you know, things as such. But the point is what they used to do, because I actually had one of my favorite best friends who one day I met him in New York, And he was part of that mechanism. He was like a high-level person there. And I said to him, and he was getting married. In fact, his name was Richard Cohen. He's written a couple books, or at least one coming out straight. And, you know, he was a gay man who got married to a Korean woman. Reverend Moon was able to cure him and make him into a straight man. And then he was one of those guys who was doing the reparative therapy. I don't know if you've ever seen any of his stuff, you know, where they sit on his lap and he tries to bond with them like a father. He believes that because men didn't have strong father images, this is how they became gay. So you can cure yourself from that. And it's like amazing how he was really now dejected by the whole counseling community. But my point is that what they would do with the Moonies, you know, these kids would be selling flowers on the street, you know, 20 hours a day. You know, they wouldn't let them see their families. They isolated them from everyone. They put them together in a place. They were totally controlled. They couldn't think for themselves anymore, just like you said. They had to do what they were told. And they were told, we're the ones who have the only answers. We're the ones that are the only ones that know what's right. We're the ones who can save you. And I saw some people who were very strong become very weakened by this.
Sure. So, absolutely. Yep.
And I think that women are more, you know, I think that there's a prototype of people who are really vulnerable. I've noticed this a lot when I was, you know, working against the cults, that a lot of times people who came from families where there were issues within the family as far as mental health, as far as, you know, divorce or abandonment, you know, who are just not secure in themselves or family situations, they were looking for some kind of father figure or someone to take care of them or not reject them. And here comes along someone who's saying, I'm going to love you like nobody's loved you. Come rain or come shine. Maybe that's the wrong song, but, you know, they're taking a total interest in them, making them feel like they matter more than their families ever cared. You know, that's how these cults get these people.
Exactly. They do. And they feel, and what they end up saying is, now, we are your family.
Exactly.
And they're not. And that's also what abusive husbands do, straight or gay, is they will say, you know, I'm the one you owe your allegiance to. And you know, leave and cleave, and that's what you did when you married me. So forget what your mom's saying. Forget what your sister or brother is saying. They don't count anymore.
And that's what happens, and they start to believe it. Because I was also involved in the deprogramming of people coming out of cults for a period of time. And it was just amazing to me, the brainwashing and how vulnerable they were, you know, to the kind of brainwashing and how they really did believe this.
So I think
that, you know, when you find vulnerable women, like a number of our women, you know, and I always ask them, you know, what was your background? You know, a lot of them had come from bad marriages in the past, and they were vulnerable. They came from abusive families, so they're vulnerable. They came from where there was alcoholism and drug addiction, so they're vulnerable. And the funny thing is that I think that a lot of society is vulnerable today, much more so than 30 years ago. Seems like everybody has a dysfunctional family. I thought I was really privileged when I had the first dysfunctional family back in the 1960s. But today, if you come from a functional family, there's something wrong with you. What do you mean you have a mother and a father living happily together? What's wrong with your family? So, dysfunction is certainly prevalent. Don't you think so?
I hate to break it to you, but dysfunction goes all the way back to Abraham and Sarah.
Exactly.
You remember that little incident with Hagar?
I do.
And the family feud that took place there in the Middle East. I think that feud ever since. So.
Oh, no, we paid the price, trust me.
Yeah, you probably
if there is bad behavior, Jewish people have paid that price. Exactly. But I understand where she was coming from, too. But the point is, you're right. There's always been dysfunction in families. It was just quieter.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just because we didn't have social media, we didn't have the television. Trust me, alcoholism has been here from generation to generation. Maybe drugs weren't as prevalent, though, Brian. I think drugs have really destroyed our society. I don't think when I was growing up, you know, in the 50s, that I even knew what a drug was. Did you, when you were little?
Well,
I mean, you grew up later.
Yeah, and... there was so much of education when I was even in elementary school. I mean, I remember the police officers coming to school with their kits and showing us the, you know, the pretend drugs. And anyway, so it got implanted in my head early on, stay away from this stuff. And it, I don't know, it just never interested me to even think about checking it out. So I didn't, but...
Yeah, but see, in my generation, there were no drugs. And I think that families have really been destroyed through drugs. So I think we have a lot more obstacles now, right?
And the recreational, the overuse of alcohol today. I mean, it's nothing for college students to be weekend bingers. I mean, sure, kids have always, you know, consumed alcohol in college, but it the prevalence today of binge drinking is up astronomically from what it used to be. It's amazing. It's a real concern.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say...
How about in the gay community? I know that for many years they said that there's such a high level of drinking and drugging in the gay community because of the persecution and having to live your life, you know, not coming out and being honest about it, that there was, you know, a high proportion of, you know, drugs and alcohol within the gay community. Do you think it's still so much or no?
Oh, I still think it's very prevalent, and even among those who are very much out. And part of it is that I just think, in general, for straight and gay people, we have fewer and fewer models of how to be in relationship with another human being in a healthy kind of way. And again, I find this to be the case with both straight clients and gay clients who are out that I have in my psychotherapy practice. They don't know how to be in a relationship because it hasn't been modeled very well.
I think that's a big problem, you know, and even if people stay together, that doesn't mean they have a good role model, right?
That's right. That's right.
Because I would like to address that before we end tonight. You know, I have so many people always coming to me saying, I'm staying in this marriage because I want my children to feel they came from a good home. It would destroy them if we break up. Well, first of all, children model themselves after their parents, right?
Right, that's right.
And children know when their parents aren't happy, no matter how much you try to hide it.
They
like,
sure
you know
do.
If your parents aren't loving each other. I mean, you're coming from a solid family, right?
I do. And, you know, my parents are in their 80s, and they haven't, you know, they really were great parents and modeled well. Here's the deal. Here's the bottom line. Kids pick up on what's going on, and the first place they look to place blame for any dysfunction between their parents is themselves. So you're not doing them a favor by trying to fake it. You need to be honest with them and do it in a way that's direct and it's straightforward and it's clean and it assures them, especially the youngest ones, but even older ones, that they are not to blame for this, that mom and dad both love them, they're both going to be there for them. And they then learn how to face the tough stuff in their own lives because they watch mom and dad face this. But if we don't face our difficulties as parents of children, then they never learn how to do it.
That's true. And my other concern is that, you know, I really believe in my heart, and there's no way you can not convince me after all these years of, you know, viewing everything, that gay is definitely a genetic factor. It's not because you grew up with, you know, a strong mother, weak father. You're genetically, you know, gay. And you'd really have a hard time proving to me otherwise. But my point is that when you come into home and let's say you have a gay child, if the gay child's getting that message that there's something wrong with gay, then that child's going to get more screwed up than if they know the truth. And they, I mean, even
That's
though
right.
parents tell me, if my children find out, they're going to suffer terribly because they're going to wonder if they're gay. Okay, well, they might, but if they're not, they're not. But if they are,
That's
then
right.
they don't have to feel like there's something terrible inside of them. They can understand, well, my father was gay. This could happen to me. you know, I could be gay, and there's nothing wrong with being gay. It's just, you know, the way that you're born differently.
Yeah.
So do you think it's more
yeah.
traumatizing for kids to know or not to know?
Oh, I think it's more traumatizing for them not to know, and but because they know something's wrong, and they don't know what it is, you know. And frankly, I don't think kids jump to the assumption that, you know, I don't think boys who have gay fathers jump to the assumption that I'm gay or I'm going to be gay. I mean, I think it...
A lot of them do, to be honest with you, Bri.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them have expressed that to me. It is a fear. But, you know, it's a fear they're going to have to deal with. You know, they don't have to fear it if they're not. You know, they'll know.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's a 20% chance they are, but it's an 80% chance they're not.
They're not.
So, you know, there's a 20% chance that anything could happen in life, right?
And better that they should know that if they are, it's okay. But don't expect it to be that way. You know, just depending on their age, they already know.
Exactly. So these are good issues for us to think about for our future, because next month is going to be my children's month. And I really want to, you know, do some hot topics on how this affects children, young adults, older adults. So I think it'll be great, you know, for us to discuss this, because now more and more, as we're finding out accidentally, because, you know, none of us were focusing much on the children, you know, except for them getting hurt. But we really didn't understand all the issues that they're dealing with. And now that I have the children's support group, Adult Children of Gay Fathers, I have learned so much. And in fact, in our healing weekend, I'm so excited. The head of my Adult Children of Gay Fathers group, who you've spoken to him, I believe, a couple times, or been
great
in touch with him.
Yep,
isn't he wonderful? But
really,
he's going to be coming to our healing weekend to do a workshop for the mothers to understand, you know, what the children go through, so that hopefully they can work together in the healing process.
Oh, that's great. That is super.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So, Brian, once again, our hour is over. Hard to believe.
Wow.
But
wow.
It always flies when you're on with me, Bri.
It's fun. Well, you know, we're both got the gift of gab, so there we go.
I know. Well, I appreciate so much what you do for our women and for the men who are going through this, to give them, you know, new perspective and what way to go. And I thank you so much for being part of my network. And I can't wait to have you back again next month.
I'm grateful for those women and men. More women than men who've contacted me, and I want to say to the guys, listen, I'm not here to beat up on you. I'm really here to help you discern your way and to do the right thing, so feel free to call me, and thank you to all the ladies who have, and Bonnie, you let me know.
Well, let's tell them how to reach you, Brian. Let's go to your website for a minute, so everybody has a
dot. Yeah, everybody ready?
Go ahead, tell them how to do it.
www.dr for doctor, Brian, Brian, Hooper, Hooper, .com, drbrianhooper.com, and they'll find, you know, my email there, and they'll find my phone number. Reach out. Love to chat with you.
And if you didn't have time to write it down, just go to gayhusbands.com, go over to my right for the links, and you'll see Dr. Brian Hooper right there. Click in, and you'll have his website also. Also, you don't have to be anywhere near Brian Hooper, although you'd want to be. But if you can't, even from the United Kingdom, they're calling, and Brian has Skype. Correct, Brian?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Or he has a telephone, so he can do counseling with you either way. If you're not in the Nashville, Tennessee area, worry not. You can still have contact and the help that you need to move on your way. So, Brian, thank you so much. You know I love you.
I love you too, Bonnie. Thank you for all the good that you're doing in this world.
Thanks. And to all of our listeners, I'll be back here next week. Have a wonderful week. If you need support, we have our online support chat for here and also in the United Kingdom, also for Europe. And we also have my newsletters. We have the healing weekends. We have our radio shows. There's lots of support, pain pals, whatever you need. Don't ever feel like you have to do this alone. There's always support available. So I love you, Brian, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Hey, good night, Bonnie. Bye-bye.
Good night, Brian. Good night, everybody.